We're back to Neil Haley's show here on the Caregiver Dave Celebrity Segment. I'm excited to welcome the program, Caregiver Dave Nassani. Dave, how are you?
Good.
And I think we're going to be going live starting next week. I have a special announcement, but you will have to wait till Monday to hear it when I go live on Facebook. But how are you, Dave?
It's about time. I'm great. Thank you. How are you?
Good, good. Live. Yeah. See, live only works if you bring an audience, Dave, and bring an audience on your personal page. You know, broadcasting on any page but your personal page. But I got to clean that up a bit. I've been kind of quiet on my personal page. But as everyone knows, we all go in new promotion areas. It never changes. Unless we grow, we have to change to grow. That could be a good take right there, Dave. So go introduce our guest.
Well, we're so excited to have actress Regan Pasternak from HBO's Sharp Objects, and she's premiering her debut book, Griffin's Heart, and she plays Katie Lacey, and it's available on Amazon, and we're excited to have you on the show. Welcome. Hey, Regan.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Hey, Regan, let's kind of jump really quickly into acting. Okay. Did you always want to act? Was this something that, you know, I got to do it, or your whole life want to be an entertainer? Always.
I really I say this to other people when they say they want to get into it. I'm like, if you can do anything else, do it. If you know that you can't not do this, because there have been many times where I thought, oh, I'll do something else. And the truth is, it's always a lie. I just love it. You just are it. You are it or you aren't it. And I live and breathe it. I do.
That's important.
I'll make a note of that.
I don't know what it means, but it just, you know, it got me through so much, just having that passion for something.
You know? Yeah, and it's important, Regan, if you don't have your passion in your life and you go deal with certain things and you kind of feel like you're being stuck in something. And I guess you chose early what you wanted to do. And I think that's fantastic.
And the fans recognize passion too. They know if you don't have it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's one of those things. It's like almost like you can't really tell what you look like. You see yourself all the time. For me, I don't even know. It's the only thing that kind of keeps me focused, and I never get bored of it. So
were you in theater at all growing up too?
Yeah. Yep. So I started with singing, actually. And so then I ended up doing a ton of musical theater stuff and went to school for the arts, and then went to college for the arts for musical theater. And right out of college ended up getting a Disney series. So I went kind of into the film and TV world pretty quick out of college, but really musical theater is kind of always my heart. You know, it's just its own thing.
Well, it's pretty common for actors to go into directing and producing and other things, but it's rare that an actor becomes an author. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes. Well,
you're kind of an anomaly.
Well, I my other passion, you know what I think? Acting, I should say. My passion is creating. I love creating. I love being creative. If I'm not creative, I'm a mess. I'm not fun to be around. So my other passion is animals, and I love animals so much. And I guess I am an author because I have a book and it says my name.
I guess so.
but really, I almost just had to write this book. I had this book inside me for many years, and took a long time to get clear on what I wanted it to be. But yes, I guess I'm now an author, but I mainly just this author of this book.
Because of the passion. How did the passion for animals start? Was that growing up too?
I think so. My family always had animals. My mom, you know, my mom was into wildlife and nature, and we always had dogs and cats, and my whole life I had many. Listen, there was times where I had five dogs at a time growing up, and then as I got older, I had my own animals, and then I got into actually kind of rescuing animals. The more I learned about how many homeless animals there are out there. So I've got a whole full house of, I've got a mommy cat with tiny baby kittens in my bathroom right now that I'm fostering. Yeah, and I've got a...
You're a cat lady.
I'm a cat lady, dog lady. I'm all of the ladies. I've got three dogs as well.
So how many animals, Regan?
Well, I'm fostering the mom and the babies. And then we have one cat that's ours. And we've got three dogs. So we've got, I don't know, how many is that? Four, five?
It's enough. Eight is enough.
Eight, is plenty.
And see, I have six kids, so I understand that, and two cats. So I guess I guess kids are like animals in certain ways.
I have one human son as well, and he's an animal lover like me. Thank goodness, because those are
Neil. That's a great title for a book. Kids are like animals. I think I'm going to write that down.
In the midst of the pandemic, they're like animals. We really have to not be able to go outside as much, not be able to do certain things anymore, not be able to socialize, depending on what area of the country you live. I mean, Pennsylvania is not shut down like California, but still, what the kids have gone through, slowly. What all of us have gone through in a year, in a week, has been rough. And hopefully it slowed down. And animals have suffered a lot too, Reagan, haven't they?
You know what? It's actually been both, to be perfectly honest. The shelters have never been more empty because people finally were home, knowing they had to have their kids home, and they finally had time to adopt. So that if there's a silver lining to all this, you know, horrible tragedy that's happened during COVID, that is the silver lining. They've been empty, and there's wait lists for dog rescues. We're here, and especially in Los Angeles, they're euthanized every other second, literally. Yeah. And that's really changed. So that's an amazing thing.
And hopefully they stay adopted.
I know. When things are turning normal. Yes, exactly. But you know what? I right now
think positive.
Yeah, exactly. You gotta think positive. But having kids, having animals during the pandemic is actually having animals have been the reprieve to the pandemic, I really think, and having kids home from school and stuff, that's been tough. Totally. It's been completely tough for everybody.
Okay, so I have an author question. So I'm writing my fourth book now. So does it flow for you? Do you just sit down and you just, next thing you look at the clock, you know, 10 hours went by, or do you get writer's block? I mean, what's the process for you?
Well, I would love to know your answer to that question after, because that's only written one book. But this is the answer that I started about 10 years ago after I'd lost my little soulmate animal, Griffin. And I felt so isolated talking about this kind of pain. They call it disenfranchised grief because many people don't take it quite seriously in society. So I started realizing I wasn't alone and feeling this way, and I knew I wanted to write something. So I started so long ago, but I didn't really know what I wanted it to be. I didn't want it to be this heavy, sad book on grief. I knew I wanted it to become interactive. So as time went on, I kept writing little bits and pieces. So there would be moments where I was in that flow state for sure. But until I committed, which was about 2.5 years ago, that's when I would really feel that amazing feeling that you're talking about, where and I felt both. I had many times where I had writer's block, and my editor would say, "You need to expand on this chapter," and I would sit there and I'd be so mad. And I'm like,
I hate when they say that.
but she was always right, actually. And where I would expand on it, sometimes it just clicks, and you're like, "Where did this even come from? Who wrote this?" And sometimes I read it, and I'll flip through it, and I'll say, "I wrote that. I can't." Yeah.
No, I know that. And to answer the question that you asked me, it's both as well, because either it flows. It just depends on the mood I'm in. When I'm tired, I should not even try it, because I'm just cheating myself. So 2 years ago, I just went to Hawaii for an entire month, because I've been putting it off. And so I got my book written in Hawaii in 1 month. And so when I got home, of course, I had to edit it. And I think it's harder to edit it than it is to write it.
But you don't outsource that editing, Dave?
I don't outsource anything. I wear a lot of hats.
Wow. That's me. That's
no, I did outsource, you know, the copy editing and the, but then, you know, you've got to take it back and you've got to do the final tweaks.
But you're a pro. So you've done this many times. I needed help for sure.
And I deal with writing for Podcast Magazine and have to write every time for Podcast Magazine, writing sports articles for them, which, you know, have to be, it's a process for me. It's like, you got to listen to the interview, then take whatever interview from that sports podcaster, you know, celebrity podcast, whatever, and go through the process and say, well, that's not going to go well, you know, taking from an interview and then creativity. And I think it's so hard. I can't imagine sitting down and writing a book. So how long did it take you?
Well, once I committed, I'm still acting and doing all that stuff and being a mommy and, you know, balancing all that too. So I decided to commit to writing a minimum of 2 hours a day. And whether that meant it, whether I was filming, whatever I was doing, I had to do 2 hours a day, whether it turned out to be terrible or not, I had to get it out. And so that really, and most of the time I would go much longer than 2 hours because I'm a terrible sleeper, and that helps when you're trying to write a book. So, by the end, those 2.5 years, I really just, you know, buckled down and did it and tweaked it and tweaked it and tweaked it literally until the very last second I could. And, you know, and so, it was so fulfilling. It was hard. I think those final stages, the editing, all that right. stuff harder. 'Cause it's not creative. That's much more technical. And I'm not as good at that. I'm such a right brained thinker. And so, that stuff was tough but man, it was fulfilling. It felt so good. And because I believe in the book so much, it's so authentic to who I am, and that part of it really helped because I felt like I could put it out there knowing that I hopefully am contributing something to people's, you know, pain that they're going through.
Yeah. I can see you directing and producing and writing screenplays in the future, can't you?
Wow, well, that is so nice. I don't know.
You're a writer. You're in the film industry. You're an actor. Writing a screenplay, you could probably do it in the dark.
That stuff I've done here and there, but it's, I don't know. It's just, you know, it's just, I have friends who are incredible screenwriters, and
right.
it's just not, that's, I love being directed. I love all of that. I love the collaboration. I don't know.
Because you're busy as you looked at her resume, Dave.
We go through seasons,
actor.
Though.
If you're she's a working actor. Working actors are busy all the time. And Reagan, as you look at your resume, you've been in a lot of stuff as a working actor, either as a major role or just a guest starring role to different things. And that keeps you busy, which you gotta be thankful for. In a way, but you're always, you don't have as much time. Would you agree if you're constantly always working?
Yeah, so. It's true. And then on top of that, you know, after we all know you have a child and then everything kind of changes, you know, your priorities change. I was just doing a reoccurring that was shot in Atlanta the last few months. I just came back a couple of weeks ago. So I was back and forth. And, you know, you miss being home in a different way when you're a mom, when you're a parent. Sure. So that does change it. That last episode that I was doing in Atlanta on this new show,
can't say till it comes out.
I can say it's a new show called Miss Pat. It's a sitcom and it's on BET. I'm the white lady on the show, and it's hilarious. It's Miss Pat is a stand-up comedian, and she's brilliant and so special and unique what she does, and very not PG, just FYI. Right. So now she has a sitcom, and I just am so proud to be even a part of this show. It's so funny.
What part do you play?
I play the annoying PTA mom because Pat, her character moves into this white neighborhood because she's, you know, making more money, and she's moves into this. She
like
came
the Jeffersons
the
moving on up.
Yeah. Well, she came from the hood in Atlanta. It's very based on her life. She has a best-selling book called Rabbit, Miss Pat right now. So it's tons are taken from that, that book, which is incredible, by the way. I'll plug that book. That's for sure. So it takes from her life, and I play this, you know, kind of clueless, but good-hearted, very good-hearted, PTA mom. And first we kind of butt heads, and then as the season goes on, we become friends.
She patronizes you a lot.
There's it patronizes me. I had to say it's not even funny. But anyway, there's a lot of I'm rude to her. I'm very passive aggressive to her at the beginning, and then after a while they just start making fun of my whiteness, pretty much is the joke, is how clueless I am about so much in the show. And it's done well though.
Cool.
And see, that's interesting. And based on it being based in Atlanta, who was the production company for the BET show?
Well, so it's BET. What do you mean? I don't really
know. I was thinking it was maybe production company for it. Now that was involved in it, because BET, that some of the BET shows are done by it's tip of my tongue.
It's not Tyler Perry. Tyler Perry, I think, wanted to buy it, get it, but they wanted to do their own thing. I think it's just really Miss Pat and the incredible creator Jordan Cooper, who and then BET. I'm pretty sure that's it. I mean, at all our read-throughs with the networks, it's just always BET people. So I don't know. Maybe I'm missing something.
No, that's definitely. I was just thinking Atlanta and shooting, but it's amazing. It's interesting to see how amazing how BET's grown with different great shows that are on there.
Well, this show is like nothing else I've ever seen on television. It is so unique. I don't know how else to say it, but it's both completely has zero regard for PG language and also has so much heart. It is, you know, so I've never seen anything like this on TV. So I don't know how it's going to be perceived, but right, exactly. I watch it. I love
good,
it.
Good writers.
So good. So good.
So let's jump to the book. You've not told us all the gist of the book, so let's go.
So the book is, you know, it's part memoir. It's part of my journey of figuring out what it means to mourn an animal, and then it's also very, very interactive, and it has tons of journaling, places for photos. We tried to make it absolutely as beautiful as it can be so that it's a keepsake at the end. There's tons of healing exercises and it's almost as if I'm sitting with the person who has lost their animal and we're figuring it out together and just honoring that kind of that.
I think it's great. I have one of my clients wrote a book, and she's a undertaker's daughter, and she wrote a book in the morning about death and how to overcome, to deal with it, and how to honor everybody. So it's interesting, isn't it, that yours is for animals and she was more with humans and how dealing with it. But there's not really a lot of books out there for animals, right, to mourn their death.
There wasn't for me. That's why I almost started writing it. There are some there for me. They weren't the resources that I wanted. I wanted something completely, what's the word, like more connect. I wanted to connect, and I didn't want it to just be this dense textbooky kind of book. I wanted it to be easy to just, because, you know, the truth is that pain does really hurt. You know, I've gone through many other kinds of losses in my life, and I felt that grief as big as I could feel.
I felt it with my first dog I grew up with. I still mourn that. It's interesting. And the other animals that have passed on, my first cat. So it's weird. It's weird to look at that, but it's as much mourning of another loved one.
It's so true. And it's not weird. And that's the whole thing. It's not weird. And to me, while I was writing it, actually, I lost my mom. Oof. And so I had to kind of apply the things. Sorry, this happens every time. I had to apply the things I was learning about mourning an animal to my mom, you know, and you kind of realize it's all where you are in your life. It's it's every memory that you had, and those apply to an animal just as much as they apply to a person. They just do. And the part that I learned, and I hope that people feel that too, if they get the book, that is that learning about yourself through grief is such a gift. It really is. And I really think it's made me a better person. It sounds so cliche, but it's actually true. And I've been hearing that from other people now who've read it and are writing me incredible messages and saying the same thing. It's just kind of opens you up to see who was that animal that seems so special, and who am I, you know, I to love that animal, you know, and you learn so much. You wonder, why do you need such unconditional love? When did they come into your life? What was that time in your life? You know, and I go through all those moments in the book. So, and everything I write, the reader writes on another page. So every experience is shared with me and that person.
I too speak about grief in one of my books. It's My Life Too. Thrive and Stay Alive as a Caregiver, or talk about the anticipatory grief, the anger, the denial, the bargaining, the depression, and finally the acceptance. But you used a term I've never heard before. I was going to Google it while you're on. Disenfranchised grief. Tell me about that. What is that?
So disenfranchised grief, I did not come up with that term. That's a term in the dictionary of psychology. And it is grief that society doesn't necessarily take seriously. And that could be worse. And that could be the loss of a job. And that could be the loss of a friend you knew back in high school, but you really didn't keep in touch with them. And so somebody's like, why are you in grief over this? And, or wow. You know, a big one is animals. And
I never heard of that. I'm going to have to add a chapter in my book.
So yes, Reagan, would you consider a loss of a job if you've chosen to resign? Do you still have some grief in that thought process? Because I just did resign from my job to focus on my business full time, which I had full time before and had to get a job, but I've grown it enough now to replace that income, but it's very hard. And it's still a grief process just today, just thinking about it. Wow, Monday, my routine will be different. Right. You know, and I've spent that time. And so I understand what you're
I think the point of disenfranchised grief is that if it's a loss that you feel and you're grieving it, then it's real. And it doesn't matter what anybody else says. And you have to find space and time, and you have to cultivate that yourself most of the time, even if it's for a few minutes a day, and actually explore it, because otherwise those things stay in you and they build up walls. They build up resistance. Wow. They build up, you know, they permeate the way we love and see things. And I researched the hell out of that. So I believe that 100% that, you know, people getting anxious, they get anxiety, they get insomnia, back pain, things, body, mind stuff is real. And if you're not dealing with grief, you're going to feel it. You're going to feel it, and you might not even know why it's there, but you'll feel it. So I am such a huge, huge believer in that.
Yeah, it's important that people know about grief, because they could be going through it, not knowing what they're going through. And it's a very scary process. And when somebody told me that you're just going through the grief process. Oh, really? And I learned about it. And I said, oh, this is kind of normal. Okay. You know, and it took a load off my shoulders. I wanted to ask you, is this a children's book, or is it an adult's book, or is it in everybody's book?
It's not a children's book. There are a couple things in there that I just don't think a child is going to get. And my own stories in there. It's not, it's absolutely fine if a child wants to read it, but, because I've had that question a lot. The cover has a childlike feel to it, because I believe animals connect us to that part of ourselves that are, you know, that sure. They talk in cute voices, and they make us feel, you know, because it's without language, our connection with them. It's very of the heart. So I wouldn't say it's for children, but I would say that once you read it, you might know how to talk to your children about it all better, maybe, because you realize that it's all, you know, how important it is to honor it.
And what age limit would you put if a child wanted to read it? I mean, what's a good age where they would kind of understand it?
I think it really depends on the child. I think I actually talk quite a bit about, you know, my son here and there and there in the book, because he has such a kind of otherworldly view on uncertain things that I don't know where he gets these ideas
from. You have a winner, by the way, Reagan. You have a winner. This is a perfect branding one in a lot of ways, because you're differentiating yourself in this topic matter. And what I would say to you, as I'm all into podcasting now, more than I ever was. So I always consider myself a radio TV host. Yeah, you're going to be on, you're on TV as well, Reagan. This is going to be on television as well on my TV station I have. But the point I was going, and YouTube. But the fact is, and I consider myself that, but now as a podcaster, your topic alone, mourning the loss of animals. If you created a podcast just on that, you'd be top notch, huge. Really? Telling you.
Well, that's interesting.
Niche is the way to go.
Yeah, I agree.
And you
some advice on that at some point. That's for sure. Because I don't know that world at all. I listen to podcasts nonstop, but
everyone listens to podcasts. That's why.
It's so true.
And animals and pets is a connection where two people have nothing in common. One could be for Biden. One could be for Trump. Just furthest from each other, and a pet will bring them together.
Are so right. I really feel that way, because I also have been so political. You know, I'm a Canadian in America who can vote now, who could vote. But you're so right that I would have my ideas, but as soon as that person, I find out they're pick up their little frou-frou cute little dog and they're kissing, I'm like, oh, they're good. They're sweet.
Exactly.
It's amazing. It really is. It's a connecting force.
Yeah.
Guys.
So how long has the book been out, Megan?
It's only been out for maybe a month and a half. So, but you know, as my publicist has said, this is not a book for like one shot.
This can last forever. This will be one that you can continue to promote for years and years.
I think so.
And depending on the publisher you went through, right? That if it's your book, it's your ownership, you can just continue just to run it forever. And once we go back to normal, the tips are you should be going to every pet event and be at those pet events and different places as a vendor, or have someone be the vendor at those places for you. And you could sell those books all day long.
Great advice. I really, really appreciate it. Thank you. Because
I'm used to giving those gems, and I'm going to drop more and more because of Clubhouse. I'm used to every conversation trying to make it like Clubhouse.
You've convinced me.
Yay. Okay, I'm waiting for money now. Come on, Clubhouse. When is Clubhouse sponsored? Today, Clubhouse sponsors the Neil Haley Show. That's what I want, right? Yeah, exactly. So, Dave, we'll go to the final question, but I'm telling you, you have a winner that can stay for long periods, because the more you get to all the different people, I think you should send your book to the guys from the dog show. I've interviewed both of them, all these different people. You should send to every celebrity that you don't know personally that has an animal, because they really would see this as something they really want to promote. That's my thoughts, but go ahead.
I hate it. I will take all the advice. If you think of anything, you let me know.
We'll stay in touch for sure. So Dave, go ahead and ask the caregiver question now, which again, we heard a little bit of the story bringing up the loss of her mom. This is really interesting. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, so I'm a caregiver. My wife had a headache when she was 52, turned into a stroke, lost her speech, became paralyzed on one side. And I didn't have caregiving on my resume. I didn't know what the heck I was doing, but I learned. We went through the grief process, you know, for about 2.5 years. Didn't know what it was at the beginning, but it was bad. I mean, she was angry most of the time. We almost broke up, but we hung in there, and our love was rekindled. And now, you know, I went to a support group, and that really helped a lot. Put my oxygen mask on first. And I realized that there are other caregivers out there who are suffering. And so now I'm a Dave, the caregiver's caregiver. I help them stay alive, because 30% of them die before their loved ones do. The rest of them become sicker and need a caregiver then of their own. And so I've discovered that everybody is eventually going to become or need a caregiver. And so my question to you, Reagan, is, has caregiving touched your life? I mean, you don't even realize it, but that pet of yours, you were the pet's caregiver. And just when the pet goes away, we suffer the same grief that we do.
Dave, you've just thought of another target market for caregiving. Caring for sick animals that are older. Yeah. There you go. But go ahead.
And I'd love to have you on my show and talk about the disenfranchised grief that you were talking about, in other words, because my radio show is to caregivers as well.
His own caregiver show. Yeah.
Great.
Well, I just right away just think you're such a special guy. I can just pull it from you. Seriously. I mean, I hope that doesn't make you uncomfortable, but you're just.
No, because I knew you're a special woman.
that's a lot to go through. Well, you know, listen, that's a whole other talk, because my mom was sick since I was 7 years old. So yeah. I grew up as a caregiver. I didn't even know any other way of being. So that's a whole other thing. But and maybe it ties into why I love animals so much. I'm not sure. Maybe it's there's so much.
Maybe the animal was your caregiver.
They really are. they are. I feel like they are our caregivers, because they're so unconditional. They ask for so little. You know, at the end, it is always as hard.
Feed me and love me.
At the end, I have a dog who's old now, and he needs to go out every 5 seconds, and he's crying. He's uncomfortable. You know, those kinds of things, and it's hard. But nothing is like a human kind of when you have to take care of them and they're sick. And yeah, that's a lot. Oh, I would love to talk to you about that, because I would love to know more about everything you went through as well. Just it's intense. It's intense. And I believe community is everything. Do you guys know Brené Brown? You know, of course, everybody knows Brené Brown. She's brilliant, but she talks about connection in this way that, I mean, she's just so gifted.
So but you guys remember, Reagan, you and Dave are right down the road from each other. So you guys have to connect.
That's true.
That's for sure. Yeah.
You can come over.
We'll Sherman Oaks. All my information's on my website, caregiverdave.com. You can check it out.
Absolutely. But anyways, yes, I've been touched quite a bit with that. And it's kind of in my blood now. I don't know another way to be. So I'll connect to you on
that's
that.
Great. So what shows right now what are you on now currently, Reagan, to promote? Sharp Objects. Again, I want to watch the rest of it. I'm so bugged I didn't. And
I didn't watch the X-Men. I think I watched the first episode.
I watched the first three episodes because they gave me that and I was so hooked and I was like into it because it's just, I thought it was just a powerful show and it really is. And then, well, I didn't game and I don't have HBO. See, there's the thing. You say, well, why don't you have HBO now or whatever, but what shows do you have right now you're currently promoting that you could say that other people should check out too, not just your book?
I would definitely say look out for Miss Pat. That's coming up. That's the most recent thing since all the COVID stuff that I've been working on. I have a ton on, actually, Being Erica is my show that I did for years and years that now it's on HBO and it's on Netflix. It's on everything.
Being Erica.
Yeah, that was a show I did for 4 years, and they're remaking it now, of course, as they remake every show. But that was my that was one of my favorites. There's so much. You're not going to be able to. I my mug is everywhere. You'll see it, some whether you like it or not.
I trust me.
You do look familiar.
No,
it's been doing that so long.
See, but Dave doesn't remember that's just playing Dave. Dave forgets things sometimes. I forget things too, but I forget people's names.
Well, I'm older than you. That's because
but I've taken a lot of chair shots. I'm a former pro wrestler, so I've taken a lot of chair shots.
Taking a lot of hits to the head.
Yeah, so I think I have too much information in my brain that I don't remember people's names. Unless I really remember them, like not remembering Tyler Perry during the interview. Come on now.
Sometimes when you're on the spot, there are things that I forget on the spot that I can't even believe. It's so embarrassing.
I call it Swiss cheese memory. Hit a hole.
But I can remember stories. I'll tell you stories of different things that I've said, but then it comes to names. Who knows? It's scary when you think of the whole CTE thing. But so, best place we connect. First of all, your book is available on Amazon, right? And all the different and independent bookstores as well. And we definitely have a link to your book in different shows descriptions. And also just check you out in all different places, right? The other things. And Miss Pat will be coming out when? Is that premiering?
Summer. I'm the worst. I think late spring, early summer.
And any other projects you can't tell us about? You got other things?
Follow me on Instagram. I'll let y'all know. It'll just
one of the new tips on Instagram, and this is a podcasting tip. Whenever you're a guest of a podcast, tell them this. You take whatever interview from Spotify, you can do it too, and you could share it to your story. So it just goes straight to the story. I learned this from Pat Flynn. I was watching he's a famous podcaster, and he basically said in a tip, and to share your show, the best way, any episode you've got an interview, whatever one you find on Spotify, is you can share it easily to your story. And it's awesome. It really has a cool looking thing in the story. And the other tip he gave, look at how I remember these tips and I can throw these out, but I remember Tyler Perry's name. And what you can do from that tip is do a quick story saying, hey, I really enjoyed this interview I did on so-and-so show about my book. And then you go right to the story, and then post the link to the story right after that.
Okay, from Spotify.
Yes.
Okay.
Because Instagram, you know, you can do a link if you have 10,000 swipe up, but that's, they don't do that as much. But this way, it's a real good way to share the link to the Spotify. Okay. So this was a tip, and I'm going to try it and see what the downloads are brought, but it's a great idea for you whenever you do a guest appearance. Well, I don't want to post it always in my feed. That's kind of, but stories, it's always good to have as long a story as possible. And then you're selling your book on your story more than on your, where Instagram won't let, they go into the feed as much as in the Instagram story.
That's true. And I was the worst with social media. I was like the last person to, I just kind of got on Instagram when I knew that I had a book coming out, because I it's not how my brain works. But so this is all stuff, this is good for me to know. It's all good for me.
It's good. This is a tip for our audience. And if you want to know more about me, which I never promote, go to neilhaley.com, check it out. And if you want to schedule a quick free branding evaluation from me, just go to neilhaley.com. See, Dave, I've not been doing that. Let's see the action. Okay, fans, you know, and you can find me on Clubhouse too. I have a room every Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern, build your brand through podcasting, 1 to 3. And Dave, you missed it when Grant Cardone jumped on stage with me.
You should have pinged me.
I had to send that information, and then he did a PTR after that. But all right. Well, this is great. I love a little bit longer conversation. Enjoyed it. And guys, tune in. We will be live next time. Dave's all pumped up. I just got to get my Facebook audience going. Wake up, America. And we'll be back. But I appreciate it, everybody. And thanks again. That was the Caregiver Dave celebrity segment. And I appreciate it, Reagan. Take care, guys. I appreciate it. See ya.
Bye, guys.